Welcome to the Curious Podcast, where we are constantly in the process of getting to the bottom of shit. Hello all, we meet again for another episode about the strange and not so wonderful things unfolding in our world. Sometimes the stuff I research seems unreal, like a sadistic movie plot set out to torture the unsuspected characters until they succumb to a slow and painful death. Sadly, this isn't a fictional plot, and today I'll be telling you about how modern science is trying to figure out how to kill, dissect, or completely diminish the soul. In many beliefs and traditions, there is a constant mention of the essence of a living being. This essence is usually associated with human beings and is said to include the identity, personality, and memories. These aspects of a person are believed to survive physical death and carry over into the next life you may be reincarnated to. That does correlate with a lot of reincarnation stories I've heard and read about, such as the last episode where we looked at the story of the young boy who remembered being a pilot during World War II. Apparently, it's very rare for people to remember their past lives in such detail. So hearing stories of people describing details they would have no possible way of knowing about definitely raises many questions about our life cycle and the purpose of why we are even here. The soul is the spiritual vehicle that drives the physical body. This is why many beliefs also attribute your mind, character, thoughts, and feelings as extensions of your soul essence. Using this theory, the body is just a shell encasing the soul and is not actually yours, but just a vessel you are occupying at that moment. When the body deteriorates and eventually dies, the soul continues existing. That being said, everyone has different beliefs depending on what ideology they prescribe to. Now we know what the soul is and its clear importance in our life cycle, we will go back more than 100 years to see what a man named Rudolf Steiner famously said about the human soul and medicine. Quote, "In the future, we will eliminate the soul with medicine. Under the pretext of a healthy point of view, there will be a vaccine by which the human body will be treated as soon as possible directly at birth so that the human being cannot develop the thought of the existence of soul and spirit. To materialistic doctors will be entrusted with the task of removing the soul of humanity. As today, people are vaccinated against this disease or diseases, so in the future, children will be vaccinated with a substance that can be produced precisely in such a way that people, thanks to this vaccination, will be immune to being subjected to the madness of spiritual life. He would be extremely smart, but he would not develop a conscience, and that is the true goal of some materialistic circles. With such a vaccine, you can easily make the etheric body loose in the physical body. Once the etheric body is detached, the relationship between the universe and the etheric body would become extremely unstable and man would become an automaton. For the physical body of man must be polished on earth by spiritual will. So, the vaccine becomes a kind of Ahrimanic force. Man can no longer get rid of a given materialistic feeling. He becomes materialistic of constitution and can no longer rise to the spiritual." End quote. Now, Rudolf Steiner's CV was stacked. He was first and foremost known as a researcher. Steiner was also known to be an Austrian occultist, social reformer, architect, esotericist, and self-proclaimed clairvoyant. So, yeah, the guy was into some far-out ideas. Interestingly enough, even over 100 years back, people did believe in the existence of a spiritual world beyond the physical world that we all experience on a daily basis. Steiner was one of the people that strongly believed this to be the case. He believed it so much that he has also been noted to say that any human can connect with this spiritual world and become more in tune with it through the control of their own mind. The catch is, reaching this level of consciousness that he is talking about takes dedication. It requires focus, intent, and it also requires discipline in daily life, meaning no chasing material things or being slaves to desires of the physical world. When it's put in that way, this advice is actually quite similar to a lot of religious teachings that advise people to try and maintain a sort of mental clarity if they want to ascend. With religion, though, the goal is to get to heaven, and the language surrounding that is all very physical because you have to die first and then your life is over and you go to the next destination, which is heaven or hell. With this concept that Steiner suggests, whatever this higher place or heaven is, he suggests that it's all in your head, meaning you can reach the highest levels of consciousness, which includes feelings of peace, clarity, calm, basically imagine the ultimate Zen person. This can be achieved all by training your brain and bettering yourself as a person, becoming one with nature and not letting the day-to-day stuff affect you. That's what the breakdown is with what Steiner suggests. This belief is also the same in spirituality, but they also encourage meditation daily for humans to be able to reach higher levels of consciousness. So there's probably something to this where people have to try and connect to their brain. And obviously in our busy day-to-day lives, people don't really get that quiet time to go within themselves and withdraw into themselves. How does this all connect to people in white lab coats trying to figure out how to dissect the human soul? Well, I believe that a lot of religious texts are extremely metaphorical, such as the Bible. Sadly, because these religious texts are worded in a way that can be misinterpreted, we have been confused into believing in this hell and heaven construct in a physical sense. I'm going to play a small clip that actually interprets a well-known religious story that is actually talking about the human brain. I will also include the link in the source material, and I really advise you to watch the video along with the audio so you can see the visuals of the parts of the brain that this person is talking about when they are pairing it with this religious text.
In the brain, in the cranium, there is the cerebrum. And in the cerebrum, and in particular, the claustrum is sitting right there in the middle of the head, virtually. From the claustrum, there is a secretion, brain fluid. And this fluid is an oil. And in ancient times, this fluid, in Greek, it's called Christos. It's called the Christ. It's this beautiful fluid which comes from the cerebrum and pours down the spinal cord. It goes down the spinal cord and it reaches the sacral plexus, right next door to the sacrum, which are the five second bottom most fused vertebrae bones at the bottom of the spinal column. The bottom most portion of the spinal column is called the coccyx. Then just above that is the sacrum, five fused bones. So the sacral plexus is connected to the sacrum. And the fluid which comes from the cerebrum pours down the spinal cord and comes to this, the bottommost part of the spinal cord. Now, the claustrum is otherwise known as the holy claustrum, simply because of this beautiful oil, this Christos, that is produced and secreted. You see, the word secret comes from secretion, because this secretion is a secret. And the sacrum is the sacred part of the secret. As the secretion pours down the spinal cord and reaches the sacrum, this is the marvelous way in which our body has been designed. And the spinal cord is basically just an extension of the brain. It also does thinking. And you see, the holy claustrum is otherwise known as the Santa claustrum, because this fluid that goes down to the sacred plexus is a sacred fluid. This is where the story of Santa Claus bringing presents down the chimney comes from. It's a story of physiology, and the Bible is a beautiful manual of physiological regeneration. What happens with this fluid is that every month when the moon is in the sign where your sun was when you were born, every month there is a germ or a seed planted in the solar plexus, which is just above the sacral plexus. And that germ is the oil, the Christ, which is born in Bethlehem, because the solar plexus is otherwise known as Bethlehem, where the Christ is born. And that oil needs to return whence it came in the midbrain. You see, as the oil ascends the spinal cord, the vibration of the oil of the Christ increases. And you see, first of all, the oil is differentiated in the pineal gland and the pituitary gland before it is sent down the spinal cord. And the pineal gland is the electric portion, and the pituitary gland is the magnetic portion. So the oil is differentiated and it is brought down the spinal cord via the pingala and the ida nerves. These are what is otherwise known as the kundalini and the kundabatha. So it arrives at the sacral plexus and awaits for the germinating of the seed once a month, 12 times a year. And if we are able to transmute that seed and cause it to rise, as it rises in the spinal cord, it eventually reaches the medulla oblongata and the pons and the midbrain, and it crosses the vagus nerve, otherwise known as the pneumogastric nerve. It's a nerve which descends from the brain area, from the pineal and pituitary glands, respectively, and it feeds the lungs and the stomach. It's a network of nerves, and this network of nerves is called the tree of life. And you see, the ancients knew that this seed that is born in Bethlehem once a month is the Christ, and that if one were to abstain from sex during that period, that oil and seed would be saved, and it would rise, and it would burst through the heart chakra, through the throat chakra, and eventually the oil would arrive with its higher vibration, because you see, at the bottom, the oil has a very low vibratory rate, whereas with proper practices, meditation, breathing, good eating, and good peaceful behavior, one is able to raise that Christ, that oil, so that it crosses the vagus nerve at the top of the spinal column, the 33 vertebrae of the spinal column. You see, because the Christ is crucified at 33 years of age. When the oil arrives at the very, very top, there awaiting is the optic thalamus, an egg-shaped organ in the middle of the head. When it crosses this pneumogastric nerve, this is called the crucifixion. The oil is not killed and destroyed, but it is magnified 1,000-fold. And the oil then touches the optic thalamus and for 2.5 days remains in a condition that is called dead, that is considered to be dead, and then reaches the pineal gland after 2.5 days and illuminates the optic thalamus and the pineal gland. The optic thalamus was known as the light of the world by the Egyptians and the Greeks, because they knew their physiology and anatomy. And they knew that this precious oil, which descended from the claustrum, from the cerebrum, and was differentiated in the pineal and pituitary glands, and descended the spinal cord, they knew that it would ascend eventually, and that the enlightened portion of mankind were able to cause this Christ oil to ascend, so that it would ascend to the optic thalamus and cause it to be lightened. What in turn happens is that millions of brain cells that were dormant are now awakened. And you see, there are practices and there are things that are very, very detrimental about this oil. For instance, overeating and alcohol and sex practiced at the wrong time. These destroy the seed, and this is what is known as eating from the tree of life. Because you see, the ancients knew that once the oil is depleted because of riotous living, the fleshly organism dies.
Jesus is a metaphor, basically. There was no guy. Many more Bible stories can also be interpreted to explain the process of a human achieving higher consciousness using their own brain power. There are also many references that mention how big of a secret this is, that human beings have no idea everything is within them, which is interesting when you think about it, because most faiths encourage you to pray to something outside of yourself or to beg and cry to something outside of yourself. It's always something outside of you. People are always looking for something outside of them to connect to because they believe this is what will help them improve or find the missing piece they are searching for. However, what if it was inside of us all along? What if we could get those feelings of satisfaction and oneness by using only our mind and staying away from anything that interrupts that process of ascension? With the way the world works, many people with a lot of power in this world would not be a fan of humans figuring something like this out. It's just not good for business. Who will buy drinks? Who will party every weekend? Who will spend their time doing all the things that ultimately waste your time and leave you feeling empty? A group of people figured out this secret about the human mind and soul and decided to work against it. They wanted to make sure that humans would never be able to develop a spiritual connection within themselves, let alone trying to reach a higher level of thinking. Rudolf Steiner spoke about eliminating the soul with medicine. He proposed creating a vaccine that stops a person from developing any higher thought or consciousness. Why? At the end of 1917, Steiner spoke in 14 lectures regarding spirituality. One of his lectures, titled Changes in Humanity's Spiritual Makeup, had some very interesting things about how human spiritual connection to the world had already begun diminishing even back then, over 100 years ago. Quote, "It is actually true to say that today, at the beginning of the fifth post-Atlantean period, people perceive the world around them, in so far as it is perceptible to the senses, in quite a different way from the ancient Greeks, for example. The Greeks also saw colours and heard sounds, but they still saw spiritual entities through the colours. They did not merely think spiritual entities, for they made themselves known to them through the colours. In my book Riddles of the Soul, I attempted to make this peculiarity of the Greeks into a thread running through the whole book. Modern people think thoughts. The Greeks did not think thoughts in the same degree. They saw the thoughts which came to them of the world they perceived around them. Instead of merely being blue or red, the blue and the red in the world around them told them the thoughts which they would then think. This created an intimate relationship to the world. It also created an intense feeling of being connected with an environment which had spiritual entities." End quote. So when I read that, I just felt like I had a light bulb moment, because I was already researching this Rudolf Steiner guy for this episode, and I was reading more and more things about him, and I found one of these speeches that he gave in a lecture, and it really spoke to me because it did make me think about a lot of the stories that people told back in the day. What if the Greeks or ancient humans were able to see spiritual entities and interact with them because they were on a higher level of consciousness in comparison to today's standards? Do people not believe in spiritual beings simply because they can't see them? It's an interesting theory to consider when you think about myths, legends, and folklore that have been passed down from generation to generation. Maybe all those stories were not just stories. This also parallels Graham Hancock's theories about many of the myths and legends about a great flood actually being true. Many of the stories also include mystery higher beings saving those that survived the flood, helping them to build society back up again. Were those people able to see and engage with the mystery beings because their connection to the spiritual world was stronger than the people of today? Ultimately, what I'm trying to ask, I guess, is did those in the past have souls that were at a higher level of consciousness? There is something to be said about those practicing things such as mindfulness and meditation feeling more at peace within themselves. Maybe practicing these things as well as other productive activities feeds the soul and makes you feel good, giving you that natural high that many people talk about experiencing from living a clean and purposeful life. In turn, another positive side effect could be becoming more in tune with your surroundings, therefore receiving messages maybe that other people might not, telepathically from the world, from other people. You might just be more open to these things, and this is something science still can't explain, so people see it as mysticism because of how we have been indoctrinated for hundreds and hundreds of years to kind of go into organized religion. And a lot of the spiritual things that many of our ancestors believed in before organized Abrahamic religion has been completely dismissed and seen as just some woo-woo bullshit. So people are too scared to even speak about it seriously in academic circles, obviously, because it's something that's not even a topic of discussion. But on the other flip side, what happens if you lose your soul? Do you die, or is the reality of it much worse than death? For one Redditor who made a post about this back in 2020, it seems their current existence was worse than death itself. It has since been deleted from r/conspiracy, which is where it was originally posted. And I think it was actually 2021, not 2020, so my apologies. Quote, "It's like my consciousness has been unleashed and life has turned the volume down real low. I had an intense spiritual awakening about 2 years ago, triggered by psychs, and it's like all the connection I gained has been erased. I think this is some kind of evil alien tech, I'm not even joking. Like Law of One Orion type shit, to stop us ascending, whatever that means. I can't describe the change in my awareness. I struggle to believe it myself. Like my mode of operation has been changed. I'm lucky I'm even conscious of it, because I feel like most people aren't really in touch with spirit and wouldn't notice anything wrong. For me, this is hell. And I know some of you know what I'm talking about when I say I feel like I've betrayed my soul's mission. It's like there is no forgiveness for me. I failed and allowed myself to fail, knowing something was wrong. I didn't have faith. Part of me thinks I did this on purpose because my connection was so painful. But nothing is worse than this. I'd rather be suffering. I can no longer feel empathy or deep emotion. Heartfelt emotion. You know that thing in your chest where you feel, physically, not intellectually. It's gone. No love, happiness, sadness, anger, anything. No compassion. Transcend myself in meditation, feel infinity, God and the like I've been reduced to my five senses, and even those have been diminished. Feel my intuition at all. No gut feelings whatsoever, like I'm completely blind. Feel music, art, food. Be passionate about anything. Have motivation for anything. I don't even feel hungry or tired. I feel nothing. Not a numbness, not a dissociation, but a straight up lack. A severance to that spark that animates our inner lives. Lucid dream. Astral project, even feel my energetic body at all. It's like it has dissipated. Sleep properly at all, And when I do, it's like I can't enter as deep a sleep as I used to, breathe or yawn as deeply as I used to, which may seem unrelated, but breath equals life force. Basically, I feel like a bot. If anyone knows anything about this or how to reverse it, I've seen all the shit about FunVax and whatever. If this is science, it has to be reversible somehow. Hopefully, if I don't take boosters and work on my connection, I might be able to improve it. If anyone has been through the same or knows anyone who has, DM me. I had an extremely strong intuition, last one I felt, telling me I would basically die if I took this dose, but my mother is my weak spot and I caved to her. Doesn't help that I'm financially dependent on her, but honestly, I should have become homeless rather than do this. Now I'd rather become homeless than ever take a booster shot. There is no life without love, and yet that is a life I'm now living. So yeah, if anyone had their doubts about the vax, here is my theory on what it does based on personal experience. Edit. Apparently, the heart contains 40,000 neurons, and I'm pretty sure the heart is the heart of all of this, so to speak. It's both the seat of emotion and the seat of spirit, linking soul and body and mind, etc. I'm thinking this vaccine has a way of shutting this process down. Does anyone know anything about heart neurons or how I can reverse the damage done to them / turn them back on? End quote. This story, if true, is disturbing and sad. OP clearly felt a profound change in themselves, and it affected every aspect of their life. I'm not sure if OP deleted the post themselves, as there was a lot of backlash against people who spoke about the side effects for most of 2021. Either way, this person's story is not new, and there have been several other accounts online that mirror this. We all have an intuition or sixth sense, though it may be much more underused in modern times. This sixth sense does make itself known to us during serious moments in life. Some people pay attention to it and others just don't. I believe OP's sixth sense, or what is left of it, is making it known that something is seriously wrong and it is beyond the physical. For those that are in tune with their bodies, sudden changes like this are alarming and demand your attention almost immediately. I can't help but be reminded of Rudolf Steiner's words over 100 years ago about using medicine to eliminate the soul. The vaccine rollout has been scrutinized for a couple of years now, and many that have taken them have been left with horrible side effects from physical to neurological, and many have just said they don't feel the same. There has also been a lot more information available about the mRNA technology in the vaccines, essentially changing the human DNA. Then we get to the theory of the God gene. Yes, the God gene, guys, in you and me. There has supposedly been a gene that has been discovered in the human body that some people have, and it is connected to believing in a higher power, whether that be through religion, spirituality, and so on. This is super interesting because scientists have discovered some people have a high concentration of this gene in their brain, whilst with others, it is basically inactive. So if we supposedly have this gene in us, it means that humans are inclined to be spiritual beings and live life according to that. This would make sense if you look back in time before Abrahamic religions and find that it was common for people to communicate with spirits from other planes, as well as giving offerings to certain spirits in return for something else. This behavior was pretty much the norm for human beings up until organized religion was invented, and then all that stuff was demonized, and we had things like the Christian Revolution or some shit, or the Spanish Inquisition, and the witches and all that bullshit when people were just getting killed for doing stuff that didn't look like Christianity or whatever religion was in whatever country at the time. The God gene has also been referred to as the VMAT2 gene and has been studied by government researchers extensively. There is even a Pentagon briefing about removing the God gene from those who have it, and I'm going to play you some of this. At first, I was surprised that this kind of video would be available on YouTube, but then I realized how they portrayed the God gene and those whom it is active in. Remember that this entire system glorifies what is bad and demonizes what is good to just make us ultimately confused. This is footage from a lecture hall in the Pentagon that was filmed by someone in the audience. This is from 2005. Just to ring it home, how far back this stuff has been looked into.
Excuse me, on the left over here, we have individuals who are religious fundamentalists, religious fanatics, and this is the expression, RT-PCR, real-time PCR expression of the VMAT2 gene. Over here, we have individuals, let me complete. So over here, we have individuals who are not particularly fundamentalists, not particularly religious, and you can see there's a much reduced expression of this particular gene, the VMAT2 gene. Another evidence that supports our hypothesis for the development of this approach.
By spreading this virus, we're going to eliminate individuals from donning on a bomb vest and going into a market and blowing up the market.
So our hypothesis is that these are fanatical people, that they have overexpression of the VMAT2 gene, and that by vaccinating them against this, we'll eliminate this behavior. So we have some very, very remarkable data in this next slide. Here we have two brain scans. These are fMRIs. These are two different individuals with different levels of expression of VMAT2. On top is an individual who's a religious fanatic, an individual, and we've repeated this numerous times, that has high levels of VMAT2. Now, this individual down here, who had low levels of the VMAT2 gene, this individual would self-describe as not particularly religious. In each case, these individuals were read a religious text. This individual lit up the right middle frontal gyrus, shown here, and that's a part of the brain that's associated with theory of mind. It's a part of the brain that has to do with intents and beliefs and desires. In marked contrast, here's an individual who would not particularly self-describe as religious, and when they're read a religious text, what you see is that this part of the brain called the anterior insula lights up. This is a part of the brain that's associated with disgust or displeasure on hearing something.
So you're suggesting I take a CT scan with me when I'm evaluating people to determine whether I put a bullet in their head?
So the data that I'm presenting here supports the concept that we're proposing, and I think that we would not propose to do CT scans or fMRIs on individuals out in the hinterlands of Afghanistan. The virus would immunize against this VMAT2 gene, and that would have the effect that you see here, which is it's essentially to turn a fanatic into a normal person. And we think that will have major effects in the Middle East.
How would you suggest that this is going to be dispersed, the aerosol?
Well, so the present plan and the tests that we've done so far have used respiratory viruses, such as flu or rhinoviruses, and we believe that that's a satisfactory way to get the exposure of the largest part of the population. Most of us, of course, have been exposed to both of those viruses. And we're quite confident that this will be a very successful approach.
This is fascinating. What's the name of this proposal?
Yeah, so the name of this project is FunVax, which is the vaccine for religious fundamentalism.
And you have a proposal already?
The proposal has just been submitted, and I think that the data that I have shown you today would support the development of this project, and we think it has great promise.
So you see how they describe individuals with higher instances of the VMAT2 gene as extreme, religious, and fundamentalist in their views. The presenter also describes these types as more intense in their personalities, whereas they describe those who are lower in the gene as responding to anything religious or extreme with disgust. I have a problem with this wording, as they are labeling people with the VMAT2 gene as extremist terrorists waiting to blow people up. That in itself is very ignorant. But given this clip was from 2005, it seems that the Pentagon, like every other government agency, were riding on the coattails of the War on Terror and using it as a means to get any and everything approved. American geneticist Dean Hamer wrote a book in 2004 titled The God Gene: How Faith is Hardwired into Our Genes. In this book, he supports the theory that humans are genetically predisposed to experience spirituality and high levels of consciousness. Quote, Hamer posits that high-level consciousness and spirituality are affected by brain chemicals that are linked to the gene called VMAT2. The book's content and the author's own comments betray the title's truthfulness. Hamer admits that this concept is a gross oversimplification. His hypothesis is that spirituality is an instinct, is influenced by our genes, and that VMAT2 is a minor one of many such influences. VMAT2, he postulates, contributes to the sensation associated with mystical experiences, such as feeling you are in the presence of God. His definition of spirituality is akin to the charismatic description of being in the spirit, and he uses the self-transcendence construct as its basis. The varying levels of monoamine neurotransmitters influenced by VMAT2 make it more or less likely that one would feel spiritual. His book was based on his study of 1,000 individuals, but was neither peer-reviewed nor replicated. End quote. This has been very fun researching, and I think I will explore the genetic side of spirituality more in the future if I come across more recent information or discoveries. I do feel that science is always a little bit behind, but it's nice seeing some sort of confirmation that we are innately spiritual beings, because there is more to life than the physical everyday tasks and responsibilities. I personally have always found it odd that atheists exist, for example. Nothing against them, but it strikes me as strange that there are people who believe there is nothing more to this world than what we see, and when you die, that's it. I just can't believe that, because something inside of me has always believed there is more to life, and maybe it's because certain genes are more active in my body. There are things that science just can't explain nor replicate, but you can see how these theories come about when you observe people around the world and their behaviors. There is an overall air of spirituality most human beings have to them, whether they realize it or not. Spirituality and religiosity are not mutually exclusive, as someone can have faith but not follow any specific religious group's teachings. I just wanted to get that clear, just because of that video in the Pentagon where they really try to make it out that people with the VMAT2 gene and extremists are the same thing. And I think that's, again, derailing us from a theory and finding out the real truth about it. I consider myself quite spiritual, just in terms of how I see and interact with the world, and this was during and after following an Abrahamic religion, which surprisingly doesn't encourage one exploring their own spirituality. It actually does the opposite. I think that was intentionally done by those who designed those religions, but I will get into that topic another time. Do you consider yourself spiritual or even religious? And is it something that you feel is in your DNA? Something that is so natural that you can't explain it in words? If so, Please share your own experiences in the Q&A section of this episode. Also, don't forget to follow me on Rumble if you still haven't, as I am trying to get to 25 followers so I can start streams on there. If you want to hear more unfiltered talk, way more unfiltered than the episodes, click on my Rumble link in the source material below so we can get these streams started. Thanks for listening, guys. I really appreciate it. If you're into the strange, morbid, or curious, I'll see you in the next episode. Stay safe. Stay curious. For real.